the simplest concepts are what's going to pay you. And sometimes they're the hardest ones for us to believe that they're actually going to work. Now, simple doesn't always mean easy either. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with Whiskey Wednesday and my main man, Jake Sheehy.
How you doing? How you feeling? Brother?
I'm feeling good. How you feeling?
Man, today's another great day.
Another great day. I love it. I love when we walk into the studio and you say, and I say, how you doing? It's a great day.
It's a great day to be alive, man. I'm feeling good. We got some good stuff on today's agenda.
All right. Awesome. What do we got going today?
We're talking government. We got the Epstein files that just came out.
We're diving deep. We're coming out hot.
We're coming out hot with that. We have the Supreme Court. They just allowed Trump to do some things. A little funny joke that I think Trump was just talking about. I want to get your opinion. I watched Superman last night. It just came out, if you guys don't know. My thoughts on that. And then we're going into some STR material here with the Airbnb Reserve Now Pay Later implementation and just some other things. But first and foremost, I feel like if we're going to talk about these Epstein files, you know, when we first heard about this, I got enraged, right? I mean, because this is huge. Like, he ran on this. I want to know who these, I want to see the list. I want to see the logs. I want to see it. And that's like the conspiracy side of me, right? Uh-huh. But then you also, and then the thing with Diddy. You know, if people don't know, Diddy was also in trial because of his whole blackmailing that he was doing the same kind of thing Epstein was. But now he's off too. And it feels like there's no accountability. So I get super upset.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think? Are you upset by it, or do you just
know,
I'm past
my being upset about any of that bullshit, to be honest. I feel like the roots in those, that run real deep in all of those different, in all of those different rings when it comes to the higher ups. I think that I'm not alone in the general public not trusting you know, our government officials, all the people in the high at the top of the, you know, entertainment industries and all that stuff. It's kind of unfortunate because we hear all this stuff and it comes up and it looks like, I mean, if I did that or you did that, I feel like we're not getting off scot-free. I feel like we're in trouble, right? I feel like, but for whatever reason, there's a ring of people at the top that it doesn't seem to really matter too much. It doesn't matter who's in power. It doesn't matter what political parties run in the show, because it's all intertwined. And and I think that just kind of, I feel like that's the case. So I really don't even follow this stuff anymore because I don't trust it. It's a world that I feel like it's a house of cards, and they're not willing to let that house burn down. And it's, I think that they'll do anything and everything. I mean, the Epstein files. I mean, if Trump could have released the Epstein files in his first term, he didn't.
Yeah.
Right.
Good point. Really good point.
Biden could have released them if they were something, and he didn't do it because it was maybe some of his powerful friends or him or whatever. Right. Everybody has their different theories. And this is just all speculation and repeating things that we've heard on there, because I really don't have too much of an opinion on who's involved other than the fact that I do think there is this ring at the top that is they protect each other, right? Gosh. Have you ever been, I've gone to court a few times and been on the sidelines with different things, and most recently a couple of divorces from some close family members and friends. And they're fighting like cats and dogs, right? The lawyers are going after each other, and they're, you know, one side's telling the other side how bad they are, and they're going after each other. And then court ends and the lawyers and the judges, they're all best friends, and they go golfing and they go to lunch together. And you would think in the courtroom, they hate each other's guts. When you're talking to your client, and I've been in those meetings, and I've realized, I feel like that it's kind of like that. I feel like that, I feel like that we don't really know what goes on behind closed doors. And I think that on the surface, we think that they're all enemies. And I don't know that they are.
Man, that's a, you just put a new spin on
this, so there you go. That's my, there's my sprinkle to your conspiracy mind, right?
Dude, that was a really good, because I always just blamed it on like money. If you had the amount of money, then
I don't think it has to do with money. There's a lot of good people with money. There's bad people. I think money's money, right? I want money. I love money.
That's just man, that's an interesting one. It's just, it feels like I'm being bamboozled or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like when you promise something and then you don't deliver, it just sucks. That hurts my feelings, you know? But anyway, all right. Moving on. Supreme Court allows Trump to cut half of education department and allow education to go back to the states. Now, we've kind of talked on here multiple times. I had a pretty crappy, like, school experience, meaning I didn't really learn a lot of stuff.
Right.
So I'm curious, what are some classes you think would be actually really beneficial? You know, you homeschool your kids,
yeah,
and so you teach them what you think is, like, you know, the most important stuff. Of course, you go with this proper curriculum, but, like, what would you think is a really good, like, for instance, for me, I would love two classes. One, I would love, like, a street smarts kind of class.
Yeah.
Like, you talk crap, you're going to get hit in the face. Let's just be honest. You need people, kids need to learn that. Right. It's too much technological stuff. You need to learn street smarts. Second class, you need to learn more about banking and loans. Like, when Jacob's talking about this all-in-one loan or HELOCs, things like that, mortgage loans across the board, no one taught me that stuff.
Yeah.
No one, that wasn't accessible.
Yeah.
Those are some classes that I think would be crazy, influential, great for kids. Anything come to your mind?
Yeah. And so when it comes to classes, first, I think the education, the money, dismantle the Department of Education. I'm 100% for it. There is zero evidence that that has worked, period. I don't see anybody that can make the argument that that actually works. Yeah. And so bringing it back, take the money, like, federal government is not the person to educate our kids. I don't know, state governments are a whole hell of a lot better, but at least it's closer to home.
Yeah.
The money's closer to home. The accountability maybe is closer to home. Because I think that there are a group of people out there that you really don't want to screw around with. And that's parents,
right?
Because, but we've also, parents have been indoctrinated into the fact that this is the best thing for their kids. All this is, we were just talking about, at least my opinion of this ring at the top that's all in cahoots, and they want us all to be pawns in the game that they're playing.
Yes.
Right. If we allow them to do that, great. Right. My daughter's in the show, School of Rock. And there's a song that they always sing. It's called Stick It to the Man.
Dude, that's
like, who's the man? It's like, it's everybody that tries to control you. Right.
Oh.
And it's pretty funny. But anyway, so the point of that is saying, listen, let's bring it closer to home. Mm-hmm. Let's let the states control it. They're not saying, hey, they're cutting out education. Education needs to be there. But the education department is horrendous, in my opinion. Look at the test scores. Yeah. Look at what they're producing.
Yeah.
And it's really, really, I mean, it's really sad, to be honest. But I think school is always going to be there to teach you to be a pawn in the game.
Right.
I don't think whether that's, and I think that where you're saying is, hey, listen, as a byproduct of a system, myself included, I was a public school kid. My kids aren't because I'm starting to realize I don't really like what they're teaching them. What I think is important, and there's things that we teach them, like they have personal finance classes, to your point.
Yes.
How do you handle money? What's important about budgeting? How do we look at investments? What are we looking at risks and returns and all those different things? How do we analyze and underwrite those things?
Mm-hmm.
Personal finance is a big deal that we don't even scratch the surface when we're growing up. But guess what? The number one cause of divorce and stress and suicide is?
Right.
Money.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, why aren't we taught how to handle it? Why aren't we taught all the good things about money and what it allows us to do, but also how to be responsible with it, how to be a good steward of it, how to earn it, all those different things. So personal finance is a huge one.
Right.
Another one that I think that is very important for us, that we make sure that our kids are going through, because I believe that there's one skill set above and beyond everything else that you will learn in your entire life, is communication and influence. And being able to communicate effectively and be able to have influence in the lives of other people, in your, like, being able to walk into a room, we've all been in rooms, and you know, when somebody walks in that has that influence and that aura about them, that leadership quality, people just are drawn to them. And so, and I believe it starts with communication, how they care, and then influence, like, and it's all about verbal communication, physical communication, all of those different things. We're not taught any of that stuff.
That's a great one.
And so there's another one that we make sure that our kids are taught. It's not taught in schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, you know, math and some of those different things are important, and we want to make sure that they're in there. But how do we try to develop better, stronger human beings that are willing to not just be, you know, a cog in the wheel, right? You know, pawn in a game, and saying, hey, listen, we want you to go out and we want you to take this baton and run faster and farther than anybody's ever run. What are the skill sets that we need? And we could be missing some. We're not, you know, I mean, the jury's still out, but those things are important to us on what we're trying to do. And I think that, you know, personal, like Andy Frisell always says, personal excellence is the ultimate rebellion.
Yeah.
And so if you really are tired of a system, go make yourself better. Don't point fingers or anything else. Like, to your point, when we're looking and talking about all the different you know, hot topics on the news and everything else. Like I told you before, I go through seasons and like, I don't have any interest. I don't watch the news. I don't get on. I don't listen to the news podcasts. I do try to pay attention at certain seasons, like in election season. I'll try to do some research and try to figure out what I like, what I don't like. Policies are important to me and making sure that we're supporting the people that at least support the policies that are important to me. I'm going to try to do that and educate myself on that. But beyond that, I have zero interest in trying to figure out anything other than how can we be our best version of ourselves? How can we be self-sufficient? You know, like that personal responsibility we talk about, self-reliant, like just being able to say, you know, extreme ownership and say, we're going to, you know, we're going to be good regardless of what's going on around us.
I don't think the model is set up for that at all.
It's not.
heads there and desks and rooms with no windows. You sit there all day. You learn your curriculum. You get tested on and you go home. And the thing with self-reliance, I mean, I'm thinking about when you're talking, a self-reliance class would be amazing because having like the self-confidence to go into a place and start networking, start kind of like selling your product or being confident in whatever you do is a huge thing for people. But I mean, like if you go to school, you know, you do your sports, which is great. You learn like teamwork and competitiveness and hard work and those things. But when that ends and you're not a college athlete now, now you're just alone in a college. You're a small fish in a big pond and you got to figure these things out for yourself. But those kinds of classes would be, those would be huge. A self-reliance class, that would be really great.
Yeah. I totally agree. And I love your, like the saying, hey, listen, I want to have the street smarts, right? And street smarts are two things, in my opinion. We try to make sure we, you know, I lean, there's two sides of that coin. One, you got to be smart enough that if you get dropped off in the middle of Manhattan or a big city or a big urban center, how are you going to survive? How are you going to handle yourself? What do you, what do you need to be aware of? You know, the different opportunities, the different threats, all the different things that are out there. How are you going to handle yourself in that situation? Right. And being able to know that. And what are you looking out for? So we try to have our kids like, okay, if you're going to be in a city, here's the things you need to pay attention to. The flip side of that coin that we always focus on too is, what if you get dropped off in the middle of the mountains? Nobody's around. You know, you got stuck. In, you know, we do a lot of outdoor stuff. We hunt and we do a lot of, you know, we're in the middle of nowhere a lot of times with no cell service and no communications to anybody. How are you going to survive in that situation? And what are you looking for? And so we do a lot of those types of things too with our kids. And so, I mean,
that's a great one.
You drop my kids off in the middle of, you know, somewhere. I want to make sure that they are aware of, again, the opportunities, what they should look for shelters, what they should look for the different threats that are out there, all those different things in different environments, because every environment's a little bit different. So trying to be exposed to those different types of environments. Kids love learning that stuff. My kids eat that stuff up.
It's so fun.
It's like, hey, listen, what would you do if you were dropped in the middle of a desert and you had, you know, no water or anything else? What are you looking for? What if it was in the middle of the mountains? What if you were in Alaska and it was snowing? What if you were in the middle of a city and, you know, and you're like, okay, totally different. But you still got to survive, right? You got to figure it out. You got to, you know, different things to. So, I mean, we could run down this rabbit hole.
That's
for a long
a fun one.
I
like that one. My brain's going. That would be like such a good fun class too. Kids would learn that and like want to be there for that one. That's a fantastic one. I'm trying to think of another one, but maybe it'll come to me later. Okay, Trump wants to rename soccer to football. He had a quick interview, and I think he was kind of just joking about this. But what would you rename football? I was thinking about it, you know, maybe like tackle. What would you call it? Pigskin? What would be a good football name? Like
for what football are you talking about?
Well, like, you know, we have the pigskin football. You throw the ball and you tackle. But he's saying we should rename, we should give that a different name and call soccer.
Because the rest of the world calls it soccer football.
Yeah. So we're going to go Gulf of America. Well, he's changing Gulf of Mexico.
The rest of the world also uses the metric system and we use the imperial system. So, I mean, like, we're different, right? We're in the USA. And so we're going to call football football. We're going to call soccer soccer. I'm not for, like, I do like the Gulf of America.
Yeah. I just like how he's switching stuff up.
I love it. He just keeps it entertaining. I think it's funny to listen to it. But no, I'm not with you on this one, Trump. We're different. We're in America. We're the best in the business. I say we keep football, football, soccer, and everybody else can call soccer football if they want.
Yeah. I'm with you. I like it. All right, moving on. I saw Superman last night, man. This irritates me, maybe because I'm trying to get a rise out of you a little bit on this one, okay? Because
I like Superman, but dude, I don't watch many movies.
Bro, I've seen pretty much every Superman, except for the ones in like the 70s or 80s where he's like, you know, the really old ones. I've seen pretty much all of them. This Superman, okay, so the director is going a different take on it.
Hold on. Wait.
Yeah.
Before you start.
Okay.
You lost me when you said you love Superman. You haven't seen the originals?
Not like the really old ones. I've seen like the Christopher Reeves one.
You haven't seen like the real old ones?
No.
Dude, you got to watch those
ones. No, I haven't. No. Well, yeah. I mean, if it's like black and white and stuff or whatever.
He's all right, like, going. Weird... I mean, there was a birth of Superman and he came from somewhere. You got to watch the original.
Maybe I will.
There you go.
The director's going a different take on this. It's like, for me, Superman is supposed to be the most powerful being, right?
Yeah, I think so too.
He is so weak in this movie. He's so weak.
Superman?
What's the point
of the show then?
Here's the deal. Like he can hold stuff up. That's great. But every time he gets crushed by it. Every single time he gets crushed by things. And next, it's so political, bro. It's like
Hollywood. Hollywoke, remember?
It's super Hollywoke. And it's a trip because this is supposed to be Superman. And then he goes on these long rants about, I'm human too. I may be an alien, illegal alien, but I'm here to
be.
Yeah, I'm an illegal alien, but I'm here to serve.
He says that.
Yeah, and I'm like, bro.
Superman.
And I'm like, bro, it's Superman. Just kill the enemy and move on.
Right.
It's so woke.
They're never going to get away from the wokeness, I don't think.
I don't think so. It seems so simple. It's a simple blueprint. Just have Superman, be Superman, attack the enemy.
Avoid the kryptonite and save everything else, right?
I know. And then they bring the kryptonite in. And have you seen the Superman where Lex Luthor's Kevin Spacey? I forgot the name of the actor that does it. Man, he can handle kryptonite like nobody's business, bro. It's not a problem. For this one, they have like a small little rock and he's all, he's dying in a corner. It's just... The movie, it irritated me so bad.
Yeah, that's a bummer because you were looking forward to that.
I was looking forward to it. It's so woke if anybody's going to see it.
Eventually, you're going to be like me and you realize that that's Hollywood now.
Yeah.
And it's like it's so hard to get a good story out of Hollywood anymore that isn't trying to, you know. Yeah. I mean, just be entertaining.
Just
do what you're good at.
I know.
You know, and entertain. And I don't know. I'm so glad I don't watch that stuff because I watched the old ones. I love Superman. To me, he's the best superhero of all time.
Right.
And I just have my view of Superman, and it's not going to get ruined with all this the new stuff. So there you go.
It's so woke,
you just saved
man. Me. I saved. All right. Going on to some STR material here. I want to talk on the Airbnb Reserve Now and Pay Later implementation. Okay.
Yeah.
For me, I don't even have an STR, but it seems like it would be kind of frightening in the sense of someone could reserve my property and my booking lead time is maybe 30 days out and they could cancel it. And now I lost money on that booking and now maybe someone isn't going to now rebook that time slot. So now I'm kind of upset with Airbnb, but I think you have a different take on this.
I do.
Okay.
Yeah. I think
about this.
A lot of people get so upset, first of all, with these OTAs and these rules and the things that they're doing, which is fine. Everybody has a right to their own opinion. We get used to running our business a certain way. Mm-hmm. And I always say, if you don't like the sandbox, if you're playing in somebody else's sandbox and you don't like the rules, get the hell out of the sandbox. Right. You better figure out another way to do business, and which we do. Mm-hmm. We are always a huge fan of running down multiple roads and running down our direct booking path, building our own business, which is the most valuable asset that we have is our customer base and everything else. Most people are just going to sit in the Airbnb sandbox, and every time something changes and mom comes out and says, hey, rules are changing, we all cry and we all get upset and we all throw sand and we all pout and we say, well, I mean, you have two choices. Figure out the opportunity within those rules and why they would do it, because Airbnb is also a business. They're trying to make the best business decisions they can as well. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those, what they're trying to do is be as attractive to the consumer as possible so that the consumer chooses to book a property on Airbnb above and beyond the other options they have, right?
Right.
So they're saying, hey, listen, we're trying to help our hosts get and attract more customers. And I agree with them. I actually think that it's not a bad thing because I think it gives you the ability to now say, think about when a lot of hosts are on strict cancellation policies, and then you can do kind of medium or you can do flexible and you can let them cancel all the way up until the time. And they gave the host that option.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're saying, hey, listen, if you come into the pay, reserve now, pay later, mm-hmm. we're going to be a little bit more like hotels, right? Mm-hmm. Where hotels have always done this. They say, right. hey, reserve the room, put your credit card in. We won't charge it until mm-hmm. you stay and you check in. They say, hey, do you want us to charge the charges to the card on file, or do you want to change it? Whatever else, right? We mm-hmm. don't get charged until we go.
Right.
That's kind of what this policy really is saying, hey, listen, we're going to give the consumer more flexibility, and we're going to give them more confidence to book a property sooner than they may otherwise book. The nice thing about commitment and micro commitments is naturally, as human beings, when we make a commitment, we naturally want to follow through on that commitment. Mm-hmm. So it just human psychology is we want to naturally follow through, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're, and I agree, they're saying, hey, listen, why don't we use this as a competitive advantage to where other people are not doing this? The host is saying, well, I'm looking at all the bad things that are going to happen. Somebody can come in and book my property and then not show up and cancel last minute, and I lost that ability to book that. That's going to happen.
Right.
Let's be honest. Is that going to happen occasionally? Yes. The hope is that because you have a more competitive advantage on the front end, on other platforms and everything else that are not doing this, that the consumer is going to be more willing to book your property sooner and then hopefully keep that. So let's say you gained two listings by having that policy and you lost one of them. You're still further ahead if you didn't have those other, you're still one booking ahead than you would have been without the policy.
Right.
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 Hopefully the competitive advantage is strong enough, and we have used the flexible, for me, the only reason I don't like it is now everybody's going to be, is maybe having to do it or forced to do it or exposed to it. And it's not as much of a competitive advantage for us. I actually like it as a competitive advantage. We do lose some people that cancel a day or two before, right? And they come in and they cancel, and there will be plenty of hosts that will argue with me about this and say, hey, listen, I don't like it. It's not where we shouldn't do it. I can't afford those. If I have a week long booking and somebody books out, most people though, they're not canceling just to cancel. Most people are built, just human psychology is when we make a commitment, we naturally want to keep it.
Right.
And so they're not trying to dupe hosts. They're not trying to book your property and hold it for the last minute and then get out of it. If something happens in their lives and they have to get out, something happens, right?
So like the thought process that I'm picking up is saying, we know that people shop for their short-term rental for a long time, meaning like the guests will look for hours looking for them. So if they come across your property, the micro commitment of going, okay, this one's really nice. I see that they have my time slot. Let me just go ahead and reserve it right now. Mm-hmm. And that micro commitment now makes them already, they can kind of relax the next day. They don't have to get back on because they know they already reserved, and they're not frantic looking for this other thing because they already booked their property,
right?
Though they haven't paid, but it's already still a commitment. I think the thought process, right?
Yeah, it's a marketing
just play to try and get them in the door.
Yes,
but now say one of our members may have this question. They're gonna go along with this. They're gonna do it. They believe in it. Should they have some kind of cancellation policy? If you canceled within 3 days, a week, 24 hours, whatever it may be, you owe us $50, $75, something.
Put the policy in place, right? And say, hey, listen, if it's within a week, if it's within 2 weeks or whatever else, we're going to collect that payment. The buy now, pay later, I believe, allows you to do that. And say, hey, listen, we're going to, you can buy now, reserve now, not buy now, reserve now, pay later. It's still paying before you actually stay in the property, right? And so, if your average lead time is 7 days,
right,
don't have it pay it 30 days and it's non-refundable 30 days later, because you most likely are going to be able to rebook it within 7 days.
If
your average lead time is 60 days, then you probably don't want to have a 7-day cancellation because you're not going to rebook that most likely. You just have to look at the numbers on your property, the average lead time on your property, put the policy and finagle your when they actually make that payment, when it becomes non-refundable, and then you decide how strict you are going to be about that. We have never been that strict about that. When somebody calls me up and says, hey, I'm sick, or hey, the weather's horrible, I don't think we're going to be coming, anything we can do to get out of this one, I give them their money back. I've always done that. I've done that for 15 years in this business. That's not what everybody does. And it's not what everybody thinks they should do, because they're so worried about losing out on that one booking. It's so short-sighted, in my opinion. We've used it to gain more business than our competition on a regular basis, because we are flexible with our guests. And guess what? How many times I feel like we've been taken advantage of. I could probably count it on one hand over the years with dozens of properties. It doesn't happen that often. And but I also think that I manifest that in our business, because I don't believe the worst in people. I believe that most people are, hey, listen, I don't go book a whole bunch of properties and then just to reserve them so nobody else can get them, and then I'll decide which one I want. I don't think most people do that.
Right.
All the things you're worried about, think about, would you do that? And if the answer is no, then probably other people aren't doing it to you either, right? And so when something happens, it happens. And we want to be flexible. We just recently had somebody, and they were coming in. They were going to be staying at our property. It was in Georgia. And the lady called us up. Her husband just passed away.
So she
just said, hey, listen, we had a tragedy in the family. We were planning on staying in the property. Husband passed away. We're checking in 3 days. It's just overwhelming right now. We're not going to be able to come. What are you going to do?
Come on, dude. You cannot ask for the money.
Right.
Come on.
But that's a dramatic example. Right. We obviously didn't. But if somebody calls me and says, my kid got sick and we're not traveling, if somebody calls me and says the weather is not what I wanted it to be, we give them their money back and we let them cancel the booking. It's just how we've done business. So this policy doesn't bother me at all. The reason that I've always looked at it as a competitive advantage, and I think that that's why Airbnb is doing it, is they're saying, hey, listen, consumers have choices. There's a Vrbo out there. There's Booking.com out there. There's all the hotel brands. There's Marriott Homes and Villas. And so Airbnb has competitors as well. And they're trying to say, what can we put in place as a policy that allows our group of properties, all of our hosts, our inventory of properties more attractive to the consumer? This reserve now, pay later is one that I actually think it's a good move, because we've been doing it for years on our properties.
Man, that's a good take. That's a good take. I like it. Moving on to our next thing. I want to read these three headlines, I guess, because I feel like they all tie in together.
Okay.
The first one is from, I believe, MSNBC. Americans are downsizing their summer vacations is the first one. Then we go to AirDNA article. 2025 vacation rental industry trends. They list out 12 of them. This is number one. For luxury rentals, the experience is everything. And then number three, unique rentals continue to outperform in 2025. For me, that makes complete sense. If people are going to downsize their summer vacations for whatever it may be, sickness, or they're scared of the economy, or whatever it is, the weather, then you have to go, okay, how am I going to capture that amount of money? And boom, AirDNA tells you right there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you've been preaching for a long time.
Yeah, so let's start with the first part of it, saying, hey, Americans are downsizing summer vacations, all of that stuff, right? Because I think that has been the trend, not just this year. That's been the trend for probably 2 years, and where the fly to destinations are not as performing as well as the drive to destinations.
Right.
Short-term rentals are a very economical way to travel. And so it has not been affecting the short-term rental industry. So you have to remember, this is talking about the hospitality industry in general.
Right.
What are the trends how are Americans now traveling? And they're taking shorter trips, weekend trips, drive to destinations, not taking as much time off of work. And they're saying, okay, we still want to go vacation, but also we're looking at it saying, I kind of like this experience in short-term rentals, because I also don't have to go out to eat every night. I can stop at Costco or Sam's Club or the grocery store in the area. I can come back. Most of them have grills, full kitchens, all those different things. We can hang out. And so a lot of these properties, we talk about the experiences we're creating. They're going to have really cool amenities at the property. They don't have to go to the amusement park every single day to have some fun and enjoy enjoy their vacation. So short-term rentals, in and of themselves, are a very economical way to travel. You also have the ability to split them with multiple people, right?
Right.
And so nobody feels gypped, right? You're not splitting hotel rooms. If there's four of you, you're probably having to get two hotel rooms.
Yeah.
And so you're just getting your own room, and then there's no amenities. You got to go out to eat, everything else. It all adds up, right? And so short-term rentals have become a very preferred travel choice for Americans, and they continue to be. And the dollars that the American consumer is spending on travel in the short-term rental sector of hospitality continues to skyrocket. It's going up every single year. It always shocks us. And we look at the numbers and we're like, holy crap, look how much more money they spent this year. Look how much more money they spent this year. Just in the U.S. alone, 2024 was a $124 billion industry. I mean, it's
That's a lot of money being spent.
Excuse me, that was the global.
Okay.
The U.S. market is about $87 billion of that.
Okay.
And so, I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so, and it continues to go up. It's anticipated to go up 11% every year for the next 10 years. That's a lot of money being spent. The reason is because consumers are realizing that it's not only, you know, as we kind of scale back on some of the things that we're trying to do with, you know, saving a little bit more money, budgeting here and there, we still want to travel and experience that. It's a very economical way to travel when you really look at it and you break it down. And that's why it's attractive, right?
Yeah. A little break instead of like a huge fly to destination type thing.
The most
you
of them
still get that experience of getting away and having your time off.
Yeah. And we always look for a 2 to 4 hour drive from major metro areas or where we're going to, you know, because you can do like, that's doable for every, like most Americans are able to do that. Right. Mm-hmm. It's not saying, hey, I got to jump on a plane and fly to Hawaii and, or go to Europe and spend a week or two, you know, you end up going to Europe and you got 2 days of travel and all of a sudden you're like, hey, listen, I got to be there for 10 days or 7 days or it doesn't make it worth it. Right. And so it's these drive to destinations, 2 to 4 hours outside of major metro areas, are where you can make a lot of money as a short-term rental investor.
Mm.
And so, and there's a lot of reasons for that. And it can be a very economical way to travel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the flip side of that, the next ones.
Unique and experiences everything.
Luxury rentals, experiences everything. Unique rentals continue to outperform in 2025. Weird. Like we've talked about that before, right? That's odd. Haven't ever heard that one before. And so this is the cornerstone of our business. We are in the experience business. And I'm glad that other people are, and they have been saying, I'm not saying AirDNA just came up with that. They've said that before too. This is just all we're trying to do is just kind of just keep pounding
we're
in that.
We're beating a dead horse with this thing.
And we have to.
Yeah.
We're not in the property business. We're in the experience business. Mm-hmm. Consumers pay for experience. They pay for unique experiences. They pay for personalized experiences. Mm. And we're willing to pay more for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the properties that are dominating. Mm. And those are the properties that are getting booked more than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And they're getting their unfair share of business because they understand the business they're in.
Yeah. Oh. So man, if you got a rental 2 to 4 hours out and it experiences everything and it's unique and personalized, man, you could be making a lot of money right now.
It's a lot. Yeah. And here's the thing. It's just understanding consumer behavior. This is not, we are in the actual experience business, right?
Yeah.
That's what we sell is experiences. Mm-hmm. But the consumers will pay for that regardless of what product you're selling, right? Consumers will pay for unique and personalized above and beyond everything else. You could have a phone case for your iPad or your iPhone, and the phone cases are identical.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, though, is inscribed with your name and your birthday or whatever else. It's personalized. Deal. All of a sudden, it's like, hey, which one are you paying more for? I'll pay a little bit more for that one, right? So we're going to pay more. If I make it even better and, you know, inscribe it with something else and it has something else, like let's say you love silver and all of a sudden it's a silver iPhone case and it's got your name engraved and it's got the things on it that you love. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, it's more personalized to you. You're going to pay even more for that. So the more we can select a target audience, create a unique experience and what feels like a personalized experience for that group, the more they will pay for us, the more they will come back, the more that we will convert customers. Because in marketing, there's three things you're always working on: attracting a customer, converting a customer, and retaining a customer. And so all three of those things we've always got to be working on. And the more we can create unique personalized experiences, the more we will retain customers, attract them, and convert them.
Do you think that's like one of the main faults people are just doing?
100%.
They have these beautiful model homes.
100%. If I could scream it from the rooftops every single day, I feel like we do, and I would, and we want people to get that point because that is where the money's made. That's how they're going to make the money. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the simplest concepts are... People think, it's not just that. I got to have something
else.
What else could I buy? What else could I add to this property? What other, you know, paint color should I put on that's going to make a difference? And the end of the day, it doesn't matter. The simplest concepts are what's going to pay you. And sometimes they're the hardest ones for us to believe that they're actually going to work. Now, simple doesn't always mean easy either, right?
Ooh,
it's like, okay, yeah. just because it's simple and yeah. just because it's a simple concept and we understand consumer behavior, we understand what they'll pay more for, it's not always easy to implement and execute, right? And so, you know, that's why we're in business, right? It's why we do what we do, because the implementation sometimes can be a little bit more difficult because a lot of people, you don't know what you don't know. You've never done it. Once you do it, you're like, oh, that wasn't that difficult. Mm-hmm. It's not hard and it's not complicated. It's hard because you just don't understand what the heck to do in the first place.
Man, that was good. Good episode. 36 minutes. I got one more question. Someone's got a short-term rental. It's not performing that well. Where do they go?
Hey, you know.
Where do they go?
Vodacy.com. Go. Listen, the resources are there. Yeah. The help is there. Our goal is to help people walk into this with their eyes wide open. And so go check out Vodacy.com. There's plenty of resources. We have hundreds and hundreds of case studies and success stories. Yes. And go watch people that are doing this. Go reverse engineer it. You can see examples of our Vodacy signature recipe on our success story page with properties that are on there. You can go check out. Lots of ways for you to really learn this and absorb that information. If you want to chat with us, there's obviously avenues to do that as well. You can book a call with us.
Oh, I love it. That was today's episode, guys. Thanks for listening.
Awesome, guys. We will wrap it up. We always appreciate spending your time with us. Our goal is to, like I said, help you walk into this game with your eyes wide open. And so hopefully you're getting value out of the show. If you know somebody else who would like to be part of these conversations, share the show. Those things help us. We appreciate it. And it means a lot to us. If you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. And the final most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Cheers, brother.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.